Well, this evening our guest is Craig Heimbichner, who we've had on before talking about Aleister Crowley, who was the father of modern-day Satanism, a 33rd-degree Mason, who was a 33rd-degree Mason for about 12 years before he was invited to go up into the upper secret levels of Masonry, levels that most Masons have never heard of, and he eventually became the leading Satanist of the 20th century, a man who called himself the Beast 666. Well, this evening, though, we're going to be talking about a different subject, and it's really a very important subject. We all hear about the Kabbalah, and we hear that Madonna and Rosie O'Donnell and other stars are studying the Kabbalah, and I wonder how many of them really understand, indeed, what they're really are studying. We, for instance, know that recently a new phenomenon has hit America. It's called The Secret, where Oprah Winfrey and Larry King and Jim Carrey and other prominent people have said, oh yes, we've known The Secret for a long time, we've used this, this is why we're so successful, and of course, as you know, Oprah apparently is a multi-billionaire, and she's done pretty well using The Secret. Most people don't understand what The Secret's all about. Most people really have no grasp at all of what's going on in the world. So let me just give you a little brief background of the overview of what's taking place. Now, everybody, if you've studied the scriptures, you remember that Nimrod was the great hunter. He was a great ruler. He wanted to rule the world after the flood, and he built the incomplete Tower of Babylon. And they were going to defy the Lord. They were going to first build a temple that was so high that if God should ever try to intervene in the affairs of men again, why, of course, they'd go to the top of the temple and they wouldn't have to worry. They'd be safe from God's wrath. They were going to be above God. And, of course, God intervened, we're told, and then suddenly they began to babble. They spoke different languages and disseminated throughout the earth. But dating back to ancient Babylon, and ever since then, there's been this desire to unite the world. And if you were to go to Europe today, you'd see posters every place of the incomplete Tower of Babylon. And if you were to go to Strasbourg, Germany, you would see actually a building built as the incomplete Tower of Babylon. It's where the European Parliament meets. For the European Union is really the beginning of the reconstitution of what Nimrod attempted well over 5,000 years ago. So what does that have to do with the Kabbalah? Well, there were certain mystical truths that had been uncovered. They were tapping into the other dimension, into the mystical, basically the beliefs of those people who were able to bridge the between this dimension we live in and the other dimension. And, of course, there were great truths and knowledge available from the other dimension, but people realized that this was demonic, and people, of course, avoided it through the centuries, and anybody who were to actually become a worshiper of Lucifer was a heretic, and they were often burned at the stake, and that's why, of course, they had to keep what they were doing actually secret. But there was always this mysticism, and whether it was in ancient Assyria, or ancient Babylon, or ancient Egypt. Why? It was always secret. There were mysteries, there were secrets, and of course they were eventually, of course, present in ancient Babylon about 600 BC. We'll be right back here. Well, Craig, why don't you pick up the story as we've sort of laid a little background of the, there have always been the mystery religions, the strange and secret knowledge that's out there, but before we get into that, why don't you introduce yourself and how it was that you came to be interested in this mysticism, which eventually became the Kabbalah. Greg, are you there?
Barely hear you.
All right, fine.
Well, there you are. Okay.
There we are. Go ahead.
Okay. Glad to pick up the thread after that excellent introduction. And I wanted to just say that I backed into study of the Kabbalah through the study of secret societies. And as you probably did yourself, if you study the network of secret societies and occult orders, one finds inevitably that they ground themselves in the Kabbalah. And I'll just share two quotes to make that point. One is from Albert Pike, who's the former Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite, the most powerful political branch of Freemasonry today. And he wrote of the Kabbalah that all the Masonic associations owe to it their secrets and their symbols. That's in his Morals and Dogma on page 744. And then another important fringe Masonic leader, a leader of the occult order of the OTO, of which I wrote a book, which I'll mention later, Aleister Crowley, the grandfather of modern Satanism, so to speak, wrote in his most important work that the whole basis of our theory is the Kabbalah. And he also wrote, every magician, therefore, should study the Holy Kabbalah. And that's on page 143 in his book 4. So here are two very important, prominent, undisputed figures in the network and the modern history of secret societies and Masonic lodges and occultism, who both reference the Kabbalah as the basis of their work. And it was through such things that I began to study a couple of decades ago the Kabbalah itself. And as you mentioned, Stan, it's quite popular right now. We find red strings, red Kabbalah threads. We have people in Hollywood hooked up to the Kabbalah Center down in Southern California. We have the likes of Madonna, Demi Moore, and Ashton Kutcher in endorsing the Kabbalah energy drink, which is quite popular as well. So we have a sort of pop level of Kabbalah, which is really a sort of entryway, sort of shallow, superficial, New Age, falsified Kabbalah, but nonetheless grounded in the Kabbalah and an offspring of it. And it's a sort of entryway, like most New Age movements are, that just pulls people in at a superficial level and leaves the door open for deeper study.
All right, you hold that thought, and we're going to be back in just a moment as we bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Craig Heimbigner, and he's simply saying that, you know, the Kabbalah is really very, very popular in Hollywood today, and we find a lot of people are getting involved in it, but they're only in the superficial parts of this. They know there's a mysticism there. There may be a secret there. There may be power for them to access. And a lot of people, certainly most of them are certainly not Jewish at all, are studying the Kabbalah. They are searching for this hidden secret. The hidden secret has always intrigued people. They've always wanted to know what it is. So Craig had actually gotten into studying the Kabbalah because he realized it was the common denominator for the secret societies. And both Albert Pike and Aleister Crowley, neither who was Jewish at all, had referred to the origin of the mysteries and of the current secret societies, Masonry, Satanism, were both in the Kabbalah. So pick the story up there, Craig.
Sure. Thank you, Stan. Absolutely. What we have is something which disguises itself in the trappings of Old Testament thought and terminology, which is really an alchemical blend of paganism with the trappings of the Old Testament. It's not authentic Old Testament religion. It's similar, in a way, to Christian, pseudo-Christian, spurious Christian New Age cults, which will quote Jesus, quote some verses selectively from the New Testament out of context, and blend them with some more modern forms of paganism. Well, this is really something similar or analogous to that, using the trappings of the Old Testament. So, yes, you will find people like Madonna's rabbi down in Southern California who will claim that this comes from Abraham, or you'll find quotes that it comes from Moses or even from Adam, which is a really ludicrous claim. But nothing could be further from the truth. When you study the writings of the Kabbalah, as you said, it goes back to the forces which either held the Israelites in captivity in Babylon or in Egypt as their oppressors, and was not something that came authentically from the prophets, from Abraham, Moses, Isaac, Jacob, or anybody else. It's actually the undermining of the biblical religion. Just because it quotes Abraham, for example, doesn't mean it honors anything authentic connected to Abraham. In fact, if you study a Kabbalah scholar like Daniel Matt, he says that Abraham actually went to Egypt and learned his mystery religions over there, learned his occult secrets. So it's really using Abraham as a cover to honor Egyptian paganism. And similarly, you'll meet, if you penetrate anything in the lore of the secret societies, you not only come up with Old Testament expressions, you'll find the actual pantheon of Egypt. You'll find Horus, Osiris, Isis, and so forth, honored, for example, in the Golden Dawn Hermetic Order, which is a fringe Masonic magical order which taught Aleister Crowley his Kabbalistic occult sorcery. And in the Ordo Templi Orientis, you'll find these same deities honored alongside the Kabbalah. So it's a way to make people think that they're connecting with something biblical, but something that ultimately undermines Scripture itself.
Well, let me just comment. It is a Jewish form of mysticism, just as the Gnostics were, which were around the first and second century, and incidentally are making a comeback today, are a Christian mysticism, as we're seeing increasing the emphasis today on Christian mysticism. What we want is not something based upon the Scriptures, the Word of God. We want something based upon a mystical experience.
Yes.
We want to search for that experience that will show us God. And what you're seeing today within Christianity is this Christian mysticism. We find this in the upper echelons of the Catholic Church. We find it in the upper echelons of the Protestant Church. So it's permeating all the great religions of the world today. Would you agree?
I absolutely agree. In fact, you can actually take a biblical Christian thinker like St. Augustine in his City of God, and his analysis is, to me, very accurate. He divides the world basically up into two cities, a city of God, which is on its way to heaven, and the city of man, the city of the world, bound together by lust, by pride, by greed, which is on its way to hell. In other words, the pagan world outside of the Christian concept. Now, that may seem harsh to the modern mind, but if you actually study all the other world religions, these mystery religions, the great world religions have something very much in common and stand in complete contrast to the message of Christ. And I'll make this point. They relativize good and evil. They put the opposites, like good and evil, on a relative footing. So they have a moral relativism. And you find a complete contrast to that in the message of Christ, where he says, instead of a message of duality, of double-mindedness, which is commented on in Scripture in a number of passages, including James 1:8, where it says, the double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. Christ taught we should have an eye which is single. Well, what does that mean? That means an eye which is spiritually attached to God, to his grace, to his word, to his law, with a single-minded purpose. And what does that mean at a deeper level? It means that we perceive that there is an absolute goodness, which is God, and that evil is a deficiency, as St. Augustine said it. So the opposites aren't on equal footing. Even in nature, that analysis of the pagans doesn't hold up. Heat and cold are not exact opposites. Cold's a deficiency of heat, not vice versa. But in paganism, we have this duality, this double mind, this duplicity. And it's in the Kabbalah as well. And their most famous symbol, which is called the Tree of Life, comes from Rabbi Yitzhak Luria, and he drew up a schema, which is used in the occult orders, of 10 spheres, 10 sephirot, they're called, emanations of the Godhead, but they're really rather demonic and diabolical. Everything's an inversion here of biblical truth. And what he shows in these is he has them divided up into three pillars, two pillars on each side, a pillar of mercy on the right, and a pillar of severity on the left, and a middle pillar of equilibrium, where the elites, the Gnostic masters, the mystic masters of the Kabbalah, have the vantage point of control. Well, what does this mean? It not only means moral relativism, the double mind, the unstable man, the man who, as Christ said, puts his hand at the plow but is looking backward, the image of the hypocrite, the two-minded, two-faced man which Christ condemned. It not only means that, but it also is a blueprint for control. And this is why the secret societies picked it up. That's why people are chasing after a secret. It's not only a mystical experience, which is part of it, but it's also for the elite power brokers of what you might call the cryptocracy, or there are other terms for it. These people use the Kabbalah as a blueprint for psychological warfare and for the transformation of the masses. So they have it not only just for occult power, but for a definite purpose to transform society, as you were talking about. And I'll talk about how they do that through this left-right phony split. We have the two political parties today, Democrat and Republican. We all know that this comes from 1798, the seating in the French National Assembly of Freemasons in France. But really it goes back through their Freemasonic lore to the mysticism of the Kabbalah. Why the left and why the right? Why are we being treated to this duality, this political game, which if you follow it out, nothing ever changes. You get a Democrat in the White House, you get a Republican in the White House, the same plan goes forward. But people are madly chasing back and forth from left to right, right to left, like a ping pong game, like a pachinko palace ball bouncing around. Well, there's a reason for that. And it's to keep people unstable and double-minded so that they can be manipulated. And there's a deeper level of it, too. You've heard the expression, Stan, I know, order from chaos, very cliche in Freemasonry. It's actually the motto of the 33rd degree, Ordo ab Chao. Well, that's also referring to how to use this Kabbalistic blueprint. So what you do is you take people over to the left, to the pillar of mercy, of mildness. You loosen up culture into a form of chaos. And what happens if you take people through a period of liberty, of freewheeling, free love, do your own thing, do what thou wilt, and chaos ensues? People inevitably cry out for a resultant crackdown from the right wing, from the police state side, from the pillar of severity. So you have chaos, and it allows a government to impose order. And on the cycle goes until you get increasing levels of control. Well, we're going through that right now, both in our own country and to varying degrees around the world.
And let me just point out that what you're basically saying is that when liberty leads to a loss of order and chaos, then the demand for order will lead to a loss of liberty.
Absolutely. Well said. And this is this blueprint from the Kabbalah itself, from this two pillars and this left-right split, which we see in our political system, and which is why we never see any real change in our political dynamics. There's a great stage show going on all the time. It's almost like good cop versus bad cop, the Democrats versus the Republicans or vice versa. But at the end of the day, the same agenda seems to go forward. Very astute, objective observers of political transformation and policy have noted that for many decades now.
And I think it was Professor Quigley on page 1247 of his classic book, Tragedy and Hope, The History of the World in Our Time, said, look, we need two political parties.
That's
right.
That
will be exactly the same, so that the people can throw the rascals out every 4 years, but nothing will change. The foreign and domestic policy will always be the same, but we think we really are going to make a difference, whereas the reality is everything is predetermined long
right
ahead of time.
That's right. Well, it's a game plan, and there's a blueprint. And that's the important point I wrote about in my article, Kabbalah of the Cryptocracy, a few issues ago in Paranoia magazine. And I was trying to say the pop Kabbalah is just a popular New Age level, but the secret societies have a much more serious use of the deeper meaning of the Kabbalah, and this is what I'm getting at right now.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Craig Heibichner. And, of course, Craig really has done some tremendous work trying to analyze for you the mysticism, this, and basically this is the basis of modern-day mysticism, which is the major religion of our time. Go ahead, pick the story up there, Craig.
Okay, thanks, Stan. The other part about the Kabbalah that's important to know is there's a self-deification aspect for those who delve into this. They look at themselves as superior, and they look at themselves as having the right to perfect creation. They want to improve on the world around them. So from their standpoint, to undo Christian culture and to impose this new world order, this Novus Ordo Seclorum state, so to speak, at a worldwide level, is their sort of self-ordained divine mission. They really have an arrogant pride, a Luciferian pride, which comes with the practice and immersion in this Kabbalah and this mysticism. So they see themselves as sitting in this centerpiece, this vantage point of perfect clarity, as they call it in Scientology, which is related to, also to the Kabbalah through L. Ron Hubbard's OTO studies. But they also see themselves as possessing this balanced state, this equilibrium. So that's why you never see them out in the limelight. They're in the shadows. They're the puppet masters. The people who are running the government are simply, you know, the outer court. And even Albert Pike, the Masonic Grand Master of the Scottish Rite, wrote and confessed openly in a moment of revelation of the method, where he wrote that the world will soon come to us for its sovereigns and pontiffs. We will be rulers over the masters of the world. Well, that's an openly stated goal. That's why when people tell me I've been in a Masonic lodge and I've never seen any of this, or I've been in the OTO and I only saw some sex and I saw this and that, but I never saw any of this, I said, well, of course not. You weren't meant to. You were only at the outer court of the temple, as Pike calls it. You're not meant to see this. That's why in my book I quote from their own documents, primary source documents, and no, none of them have challenged me on that, and they can't. And that book, by the way, I should mention for interested readers, because it does go into the Kabbalah, is entitled Blood on the Altar, The Secret History of the World's Most Dangerous Secret Society, and that's available.
We carry it.
You carry it. Great. Well, they can get it from you.
I've moved a lot of them. We think it's an important book. And,
great.
So we certainly advocate people read all of these things to begin to understand how this all fits together. And then, of course, people have to read Albert Pike, where he will tell you that
yes.
One place on page 819 he comments, and this is Morals and Dogma.
Right.
The blue degree are about the outer court or the portico of the temple.
Right.
Part of the symbols are displayed there for the initiate, but he is intentionally misled by false interpretations.
Absolutely.
It is not intended that he shall understand them, but it is intended that he shall imagine he understands them. Their true explication is reserved for the adepts and the princes.
Absolutely.
Masonry. And that's really, and in fact, elsewhere he writes, you know, Masonry conceals its secrets from all except the adepts and the sages or the elect, and uses false explanations and misinterpretations of its symbols to mislead those who deserve only to be misled, to conceal the truth which it calls light from them, and to draw them away from it. So, Masons really don't understand they're being lied to from the very beginning. You'll find both of those quotations in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness.
Yes.
You have to understand that the Mason doesn't understand Masonry because he's been intentionally deceived, and most of them had no idea.
That is not only true of Freemasonry. I even believe it's true of some of the lower members of the OTO itself and these other orders. They, just because they're in one, doesn't mean they're privileged to order.
Okay, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Craig Heimbichner, and we're talking about how Ascending Masonry is a modern-day manifestation of the Kabbalah, according to Albert Pike. And all of the mysteries, all of these ceremonies of Masonry are based upon the Kabbalah. But as Craig has pointed out so well, that Albert Pike, the father of modern-day Masonry, makes the point that they intentionally mislead the Mason. So the Mason really doesn't understand Masonry. They are told things about the ceremonies that just aren't true. And they sort of chortle at how gullible the average person is, who is a Mason, to think that they're being told the secrets, whereas they specifically are not being told the secrets. Now, why would anybody join an organization that intentionally is going to deceive you? Well, of course, most Masons don't study their own writings well enough to know, but if anybody, of course, wants to get the quotations, why, they're in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and you can look up Morals and Dogma there in the index and find where these quotations are, and then go to Albert Pike's book. If you're a Mason or you know somebody's a Mason, let them understand that they have been misled and they're on a one-way trip to hell, because when they stand before the great white throne of judgment, they will be judged, and no Christian, no person who's going into heaven stands before the great white throne of judgment. The great white throne of judgment that every Mason looks forward to coming before is the judgment of the damned. And the fact that they don't know that and nobody's telling them reflects the fact that maybe we don't care enough to go out on a limb and tell people the truth. And that's why I do what I do, and Craig does what he does. Craig, pick the story up.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Stan. And I should add that with the Freemasons and even some lower members of occultism that have gotten in through pop culture, disaffected youth, thinking that they're engaged in some sort of rebellion against some aspect of modern culture, this layer of initiate is really still at a pretty superficial level. So I've had some challenge me and say, well, I never encountered any of that in my lodges. Now, some of them may be lying, but I think some of them are actually sincere. But I wanted to add that the foremost scholar of the occult order that I've written about, the OTO, which is grounded in the Kabbalah, as Aleister Crowley has said, foremost scholar of that in the world has to be Peter Koenig in Switzerland. And he contacted me after he got a hold of my book, and he said my quotations were accurate, and he has gone on to endorse it online, and he has recommended it himself to others. So he's a scholar who has more primary source documents than anybody else in the world, I would say, and I think heads of various branches of the OTO are jealous of him because he spent a lifetime accumulating them. So he supported these quotes. The quotes in the book are accurate. Whether you meet somebody who understands that or not, this is what's going on, that we have a blueprint based on the Kabbalah, which is used for mysticism, for occult power, and for transforming the world into this unchristian direction, which they see as what they call the new eon, or the new world order, or various terms they have for it, but they're pushing culture from various fronts in this direction. And one way they do that is by also taking a piece of the Kabbalah which is associated with number, place, symbolism, and ritual. The Kabbalah is actually usually divided into three branches. There's a theoretical Kabbalah, which is sort of an occult philosophy, alchemically blended with ancient Israelites' biblical concepts in their Book of Zohar, the Sefer Zohar Book of Enlightenment, or other books, including, by the way, they teach reincarnation as well. But this sort of level, the theoretical level, is one level. That's sort of the occult college course, which somebody like an Aleister Crowley had to study to gain some of his basic groundwork in his sorcery and his other practices, and including importantly, his work as a British agent later. But also, there's a meditative aspect to the Kabbalah. And then finally, that ties very closely with the magical aspect of the Kabbalah. And that's where we encounter the obsession with number, place, symbol, and ritual. And here's where we'll talk a little bit more about how things like the Kennedy assassination, for example, are dripping, if you analyze it from an occult standpoint, with deliberately placed occult elements, which show that this was not just a random act. This was a carefully staged a moment in history by certain shadowy figures.
And I think what's so important for people to understand is there is a magical element to this. And people don't believe in magic. I mean, something you see on the stage, sleight of hand. But ladies and gentlemen, there really is magic. There really are people who have supernatural powers, and you want to avoid those like you would the plague, because that power does not come from our Lord Jesus Christ. It comes from the false counterfeit that, of course, leads you to eternal damnation. Well, Craig, go ahead and pick the story up there.
Sure. It's not a real pleasant story. Some of the elements are a little bit shocking, so it kind of warn the readers, or warn the listeners, that when we talk about things like the Kabbalah, we are talking about a dark subject, and it's maybe not for everybody to pay attention to, but as long as they grasp the point, the basic point, that there are forces out there trying to deliberately move things culturally and historically in an increasing direction of occult initiation for our culture today in the United States, in Europe, and worldwide. That's the important point for them to grasp. That people have sometimes said, how come things are worse today, or is this only my apprehension or perception or subjective way of understanding things? Things seem to be always getting worse. Now, they might be subjective and biased, but Actually, you can take some historical moments and gauge the morals of a society. For example, you can do it not only today, but in historical cultures of the past and see that, yes, there was a decline before that culture and that civilization went down. Well, it's not a coincidence, in my opinion, that a lot of this is happening today. This is a definite work of transformation of the masses and a psychological warfare based in the mechanism of the Kabbalah through these secret societies. So let's take, for example, 9/11. That was a great transformative moment which opened up the psyche of the masses to want more military and police control, to want to give up liberties, to want to have safety because they felt extremely vulnerable. So you can take a moment like that, and you could say this might have been exactly what the government said and the newspapers said, but that story is worn increasingly thin as there have been a number of investigators who've looked at this and found evidence of advanced intelligence foreknowledge, of deliberate negligence that goes beyond coincidence in the airplanes intercepting it, and on and on and on, which point to a government that at minimum allowed this, if not had an active hand. So why would a government engage in allowing something like this? Well, 9/11 wouldn't be the first instance. We know from a book like Day of Deceit by Robert Stinnett that FDR had foreknowledge from his memos, which are now indisputably unearthed. He knew Pearl Harbor was coming and deliberately did nothing to allow it because he wanted the chaos as a good Freemason, as a high-level Freemason, as an initiate, as a member of the cryptocracy. He wanted the chaos.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Craig. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Craig is talking about how, as everything about 9/11 suggests, that there was government foreknowledge, either involvement or at least knowing the attack was coming, and not trying to stop it, just exactly as happened at the time of Pearl Harbor. And Craig referred to the book by Robert Stinnett. Incidentally, we have a four-tape set on Pearl Harbor with 2 hours of interviews with Robert Stinnett. And Robert Stinnett had gone through the government's documents and proved beyond any shadow of a doubt that President Roosevelt knew the attack was coming on Pearl Harbor, did nothing to stop it, because he needed an excuse to take us into war. So pick the story up there, Craig.
Yes, I was unaware that you had that tape set, but I'm delighted to know about it. I'll have to get a copy of that myself. Stinnett was absolutely, he's never been refuted, and he can't be, because he uses primary source documents. And he built his case and showed that Freemason FDR took us into war. Why? Why would somebody allow such a sacrifice? Well, if you look at it from the vantage point of the occult, of taking apart our current world order, blood must be shed. This is axiomatic, not only in the occult, but it's formally expressed in the Book of the Law, which is used by the OTO, this higher occult Masonic order I've written about, and I quote from it in my book. Blood must be shed because that level of chaos is needed to bring about planetary transformation. In other words, they need the chaos so that they can bring about order. That's the Masonic motto, order from chaos, ordo ab chao. So FDR got that war, and we got 9/11. And out of 9/11's chaos, we're seeing an imperial presidency. We're seeing the Constitution thrown out the window increasingly. We're seeing more and more warfare, more and more aggression, more and more militarization. And people are sitting by passively allowing this to happen, which is also not a coincidence, because the masses' minds have been victimized by very careful psychological warfare. People are actually under assault through the television, through popular music, through the education system. They're really, without the grace of God and a will to understand and to seek out the truth, the average person is a sitting duck for this sort of manipulation. And they're losing their liberties, and they're passively sitting by while society unravels around them for their children and their children's children. The Kabbalah's role in going back a bit to 9/11, to assassinations, and by the way, I'll be writing an article for the August issue, not this one, of Paranoia Magazine, the Cryptocracy's Greatest Hits on assassinations. Assassinations frequently have a ritual murder aspect to them, Kennedy's being a predominant one, and I won't go into that right now, but just simply say the landmark, in my opinion, the landmark analysis of that would have to be the one done by the late James Shelby Downard and his protege Michael Hoffman, King Kill 33, where they looked at the Masonic symbolism of the Kennedy assassination, and it's all over that assassination. If you know Freemasonry, the three hobos who appear on the lawn, they're a Masonic calling card. They're from the Masonic ritual of the third degree, the three unworthy craftsmen that appear when Hiram Abiff is killed in that ritual. That's just one instance. How it's by the 33rd degree northern latitude, and on and on, at the site of the Masonic Lodge in Texas, in Dealey Plaza, and so on and so on. All these converging symbols. Well, that's very Kabbalistic. A careful occultist will not only create the conditions for his actions, but he'll carefully control his environment. So when the masters of the cryptocracy, the elites and the shadow masters and puppeteers, want to transform society and play a ritual out on the mind of the masses, they consult their Kabbalah, they consult their Masonic ritual, and they construct it with number, place, ritual, and symbol around the event. It's sort of a calling card, and you can notice it if you know the Kabbalah. You can pick out the elements, and they pass far beyond coincidence. And so that's another clue that this is not just simply a set of coincidences, but a deliberate plan, a blueprint being acted out on the world stage. That's why we have an increasing level of immersion in the occult. And you remember 20, 30 years ago, Stan, there was no section in a bookstore that said magical studies. Nowadays, it's commonplace. Even in a great big book chain, you'll find a section of magical studies. You can find Aleister Crowley's writings. There will be tarot decks by Crowley for kids to play with. This is the level of immersion in the occult that's happened all around us. Well, people are just watching sports channels, 400 cable channels, and not paying any attention whatsoever. It's happening right and left, and the churches, as you pointed out, are largely silent, if not tragically complicit in some of this.
And I think really, of course, even more so, really more to my concern, is just within this last few weeks, suddenly this phenomenon of the secret now, which, of course, is introducing people to the occult without their knowledge as they begin learning the secret and the techniques of the secret and the mind games that you play with the secret, without actually realizing that as they begin to concentrate and focus their attention on the materialistic things they want to obtain, and begin to try to manipulate the universe with their minds, they're opening themselves up to demonic possession. None of this existed 30 years ago when I was certainly just, 40 years ago when I was getting started in my study. I lived in an entirely different world, a different America.
Yes.
In fact, we did not find the emphasis on the supernatural there. Oh, it was here, but I mean, it wasn't commonplace. Today,
right,
it is commonplace, and there are increased manifestations of demonic activity and possessions that were not here 40 years ago.
That's true. And, you know, sometimes it's easy, and I do it too. I focus on, because it's right in our faces, we focus on the type of level of Satanism that's out there in the common culture and the society at the level we're talking about, people actually practicing, you know, buying the Satanic Bible, trying out things, which was something that would have been unheard of half a century ago. But also, that level of Satanism is easy to detect. What I call governmental Satanism is much harder to see, which is the Satanism that hides itself in business suits, in smiling, pious masks of Christianity, the Satanism that waves a Bible and quotes a verse, but then goes back to a tomb at Yale in Skull and Bones, or goes back to the Masonic Lodge, or goes back to the OTO, and makes plans to undo Christian civilization. That's the much more insidious, dangerous level of Satanism, and many times Hollywood will ramp up some movies glorifying sort of pop Satanism, and distract everybody with a set of horror flicks. So while we're all immersed and concerned about that, you remember the phenomenon a couple of decades ago, the Satanic Panic, it was called, all the obsessive focus on Mike Wakino and Anton LaVey, not to minimize those people's serious diabolical network of lodges and secret societies, but simply to say that while we focus on that, it's like a stage magic show. Meanwhile, our governmental leaders are literally getting away with murder. And so that's the level I try to focus on more and draw people's attention to, because that's the one that's ultimately going to really affect their future at an even more profound level, because that's the level at which Christian culture is being undone at the seams.
In fact, one of my good friends, he says, the real Satan doesn't wear tights, and have a pitchfork. Certainly this was the picture we had of Anton LaVey
right. Dressing
up like this. And this was all stage business.
Right.
I mean, the real Satan, as you say, the real Satanists, they wear suits and ties. They look just like you and I. They may be music. They may be involved in music. They may be the leading bands. They may be the leading singers here in America that captivate the imagination of the American people. But step by step, they're leading away from the true God and, of course, into worship of the false God.
Yes.
Go ahead.
That's very, very true. We're in total agreement on that. Business suits, and even more insidiously and more abominably, they may hide themselves behind the trappings of church attendance and church affiliation and some form of Christian public prayer. And yet, at the end of the day, if that person goes back to the order of skull and bones, or that where they were lying in a coffin for their initiation, and they're doing, by the way, coffins, people picked up the skull and bones in the last election when we had two presidential candidates facing off with each other, who both came from the same powerful fringe Masonic occult order, the Order of Skull and Bones. Both Bush and both Kerry were members. And so that got some focus, but as always, that was easily dealt with by misdirection. They don't have to assassinate guys like you or me much anymore, thankfully. It can be handled much more easily by damage control, by putting out a couple of magazine articles to distract people from anything you or I might come up with, Stan. And so that's what happened with Skull and Bones. We had a few books appear that exposed it, then we had some books that downplayed it and dismissed it as sort of a fraternity. Well, fraternities are not all that harmless either, and I could get into that on another night. But back to Skull and Bones, the symbolism in Skull and Bones is totally quintessentially Masonic and Kabbalistic. The obsession with skulls, coffins, is not simply something in Skull and Bones. It's a Masonic ritual, embracing the skeleton, being in the Masonic meditation room with the skeleton, the obsession with death, and also something that comes up over and over is the twin obsession with sex. Now, if you look at our culture right now, what is it obsessed with? Sex and death. Just look at a blockbuster video, a Hollywood video store, just to pick two out of the air, or any other video store, and just walk in, and movie after movie greets a person. It's either about sex or death or a combination of the two. Well, that's very Kabbalistic. That would be defining two of the key elements of the rituals and celebrations of the Ordo Templi Orientis, or at the deeper level, the Kabbalah itself. So that's mirrored in our pop culture. Is that a coincidence? I don't believe so, because the members of these secret orders have written, as I've quoted from them, as you've quoted from them, they've written of their stated goals to impose this Kabbalistic schema upon the world, to gradually gain control. They've written and confessed to conspiracy, to infiltration. I've quoted from them in my book. Nobody's challenged those quotes. In fact, they've been verified and authenticated. So once you have an understanding that these are openly stated goals at a certain level, then you can start to understand what we're going through is more than just an incredible set of coincidences.
And, of course, I think you have to understand Craig's book, Blood on the Altar of Eddie's Destroy of Aleister Crowley, and the OTO. And you go up in the Internet and look this up. It's all there. But there's so much information there that just confuses you. But these are key people, very powerful people, and of course it's not simply one organization. There are a myriad of organizations, but they all have a common denominator. They're going to bring about this world government under their control, and of course they're going to destroy Christianity. And that's why Christianity is under attack today. And of course we see the ADL or the Abadi Prith, and we say, oh, that's the Jewish people hate Christianity. No, they don't represent the Jewish people as a whole. They do this simply to throw us off the track of what this is really all about. The Anti-Christian Lawyers Union, the ACLU, attacking Christianity. They are simply a symptom of this whole conspiracy against God that comes from the dark side.
Yeah, I like to draw a big distinction for people and remind them that the Old Testament religion of Israel is really fulfilled in the New. And if they study the Old Testament, it leads one to Christ. That's where it goes. And so if anybody's quoting from the Bible accurately in the Old Testament, it will inevitably point to Christ. In fact, he said that himself. He said, study the Scriptures, they point to me. And they do. He quoted that to his disciples on the road to Emmaus and showed them that he fulfilled the law and the prophets. So we should never have any fear. The Old Testament, fear the Old Testament, it's actually our book as Christians. It belongs to us. At a spiritual level, Christ fulfilled it and explains it. And the only way to understand the Old Testament is in the light of the New. But not everything that comes out and quotes the Bible, and in the tradition of Judaism or also, as we mentioned earlier, spurious Christian cults, which quote the New Testament falsely, neither of those, just because they're connected to a tradition, connected to quoting of certain texts, doesn't mean it's authentically biblical Old Testament religion or New Testament religion, for that matter. So people should be on their guard not to be fooled by that. The Kabbalah is paganism. In fact, there's a tantric element to the Kabbalah, which I write about in my book, and that's acknowledged by Kabbalistic scholars. If you look at the Kabbalah itself, you'll find references to some rather disgusting things I won't even talk about over the air, but you can imagine they're phallic practices, and this goes back to the paganism of Babylon and Egypt, and a sort of phallic paganism which is celebrated in tantric circles, and these rites and practices actually were condemned in the Old Testament among the Canaanites, but they were they contaminated a portion of the children of Israel and were unfortunately carried down in sort of a petri dish among some of them, and that's how we have it today. It's very old paganism, it's not biblical, and it's actually subversive of that. So what we have for the Kabbalah is a petri dish in our culture, which is out there to deceive people at a popular level, but inside the dark rooms of the secret societies, you have also a much deeper theoretical use of it to understand a blueprint for psychological warfare and the alchemical transformation of world culture and the minds of the masses. So it has both uses. So people are hit from two ends. One is just the superficial occult level of pop culture, bad enough, but they're also hit from the other end. So they're hit from below and they're hit from above. They're hit from the pop culture, from the classroom, from the TV screen, and then they're hit from above from their government leaders who are members of these secret societies in many cases.
Well, I think it's important for people to understand. For instance, Craig refers to alchemy, and alchemy, you thought, was, of course, you're going to turn the dross into gold. That was the idea. Well, what this is really all about, of course, is the transformation of the individual. They don't want you to understand that these people are being transformed. They're not actually going to create gold out of dross. They're going to transform the individual. And, of course, they are going to become as gods. And they are going to then be able to transform the world. Now, that was the message of the serpent, the Garden of Eden. And that is the secret message. that is being transmitted today, as they are changing the world. Well, Craig, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up this hour, and then we'll have our final closing remarks, and then, of course, I'll let you pick up in the second hour. But you've got 3 minutes now, uninterrupted.
Okay. Well, Stan, I think I'll mention one other thing which I didn't get into, and that is we mentioned Babylon and Egypt. And maybe we can get into this a little bit more in the second hour, but there's also the paganism of Sumeria, and I think you mentioned it at the beginning of the last hour, and that's a very interesting thing to look at, because that's where the worship of Shaitan, which is etymologically related to Satan for a very good reason, comes from. And that's where the original source of this duality in paganism seems to come from. So the Kabbalah, with its left versus right, our political system, this double mind split in the masses, we'll talk about that in the next hour, and how that goes all the way back to the paganism of Sumeria, the worship of the dual star Sirius A and B, and how that's still venerated in the secret lore of the Masonic lodges and the occult societies, which constitute an important level of the cryptocracy today that's transforming our culture. If you want me to end with one more thought, I can also mention, and we'll get into this a little bit in the next hour, that the Kabbalah itself is being openly acknowledged increasingly by translations into English of texts which never were translated before, and there's a reason these things are being revealed. We can talk about the revelation of the method and what role that plays in psychological warfare in the masses as well.
Okay, fine. Well, we want to cover whatever you've got, because I'm going to learn a lot from you tonight.
Well, thanks, Dan. I always learn from you as well.
Well, anyway, of course, this is so vitally important to understand that there really are secret societies, that there really is a goal. I think it was brought forward in Professor Quigley's book, although I don't think he really understood the spiritual implications of it. He said that the purpose of the secret society that Cecil Rhodes created was to bring the kingdom of God to earth. And he makes that statement a number of times in the book. And the book is important to read because it gives you the insight from an insider who really never understood the spiritual implications of what he had uncovered. We owe him, Professor Quigley, a great debt of gratitude. I fear for his eternal soul, because he did not know our Lord. But under any circumstances, this is the goal. Mankind is going to transform the world and bring the kingdom of heaven to earth. And look around you. Do you really think we're doing a good job? Do you think this is God's work, or do you think this is the work of counterfeit gods? We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Craig Heimbichner. Now, we're going to be losing part of our audience here in just a few moments. This will be a two-hour interview, and if you'd like to get the full 2 hours, either on tape or CD, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do carry Craig's book, Blood on the Altar. We carry a 4-tape set of my discussions with Craig on Aleister Crowley, and then we have a 4-tape set, we call The Supernatural, and that has 2 hours of my interviews with Craig, and then another 2 hours of my interviews with Johanna Michelson, who wrote the book entitled The Beautiful Side of Evil, because she was a medium, and she, of course, had the ability to contact the other side, the other dimension, and she was being trained as a psychic healer, and she describes all of the wonderful supernatural healing she saw. And she thought this has to be of God. After all, healing these people who had incurable tumors that had been given up by organized medicine. And of course, she was so enthusiastic about it until her sister told her, Johanna, don't you realize this is all demonic? And she initially repudiated that, and then of course she went off to Switzerland, and she ran into Francis Schaeffer there, and she got herself into a proper relationship with our Lord, renounced her properties as a medium. And you really, if you have this curse, and it is a curse, not a gift, the ability to contact the other side, the other dimension, wife, she went back and she checked on so many of these supernatural miracles she'd seen, and so many of them were demonically possessed. They're really, I mean, this is an amazing four-tape set, an amazing book. It's called The Supernatural, and we have so many things. I suppose one of the most important things you can watch, if you have not done it, is the tapes. These are videos, actually. They're on DVD. And I believe they're also available in video and in DVD, called the They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. And you'll see people like Marilyn Manson and Ozzy Osbourne, great music, talent of our time, singing about Aleister Crowley. Aleister Crowley, who was a Satanist. You'll see all about the Beatles and about so many of the major groups, music groups, these people who have sold their souls to the devil. And it's not simply music people, but here's a wonderful opportunity, because many of these people were quite forward in what they were doing. They wanted fame, they wanted wealth, they wanted fortune, and they wanted it right now, and they didn't care what the price was, and many of them paid a terrible, terrible price for it. And this is what my fear is, with so many people getting involved in the secret. And we'll be putting out material on that and have it available for you, we hope, very, very soon, so you can help to sound the clarion call to others. But the items we've talked about already, Sidney Craig's book, Blood on the Altar, the four-tape set on Aleister Crowley, the four-tape set on the supernatural, the videos, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, and what two others that I would mention? Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2, both put up by our good friend Chris Pinto. What Chris on one of them has is this woman who is actually a very attractive woman, and then she suddenly becomes possessed and begins to channel this other entity. And you'll find this fascinating, and we do hope that many of you, of course, will give serious consideration to get this material that you need to have to really understand what's going on today. So anyway, this is Dr. Stan. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, we hope that many of you will help us get the information out. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a catalog, or give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because America is under attack today. So please pray for America and pray for revival. Our special guest this evening is Craig Heimbichner. And certainly, this is a strange subject. Most people don't like to think about secret societies. Most people don't like to think about another dimension out there that's got wicked and evil spiritual forces in it. But we have to sound the warning. This is what I'm called to do. I'm sure this is what Craig feels that he's called to do. He probably would just as soon not be reading all these terrible things about these terrible and wicked people, but somebody has to be the watchman on the wall and awaken the American people and call them to an awareness of what's going on and call them to a repentance, because even within the Christian church, both Protestant and Catholic, they've changed the very nature of God. We no longer, of course, fear God. We no longer feel that we have to obey God. We do what we want to. We're saved by grace as Protestants, and we just don't have to worry about all those old rules and regulations. And ladies and gentlemen, I believe that we do. I believe that they've altered the music of the church and the message message of the church. And I believe we are all sinners, and I believe we need people who fear God once again, because believe there is the judgment, there is punishment for sin, and there's so many people today who are being led away from the truth by these false ideas, these false religions. And of course, they all go back really to the Kabbalah, which was the codification of the ancient mysteries, and this was done about 600 years before Christ was born in Bethlehem during the Jewish captivity. And the ancient rabbis got together all the knowledge that had come from Assyria and from Babylon and from ancient Egypt, and they codified this as to how to begin to contact the other dimension where the true power lies. Pick the story up there, Craig.
Well, that's a great introduction once again, Stan, and I couldn't agree more. This is a codification, and it was a gradual distillation. And just because it was done by rabbis doesn't mean, as I always like to say, it came from Abraham, Moses, the prophets, or anybody else that they said it came from. It most emphatically did not. Just picking up one book by way of example, that's a very secret Kabbalistic text, which was hard to get a copy of, and there was no English translation until just a few years ago. It was called the Sefer Retzil Hemlock. And you're right, I don't want to study these books, but somebody has to look at this stuff. And this was a secret Kabbalistic text jealously guarded by these Kabbalistic rabbis who held it to be a key to magical power. Well, if you read it, they say this book was presented to Adam in the Garden of Eden. Well, of course, that's complete nonsense. And if you flip through the book, it's full of occult teachings, occult symbols, amulets, astrology, and you see things like pentagrams and hexagrams, and that brings me back to something I mentioned at the end of last hour about Sumeria, the pentagram. People see this pentagram in Wicca today, and they wonder where, you know, some people might wonder, where did the pentagram come from?
Okay, Craig, pick it up. Where did the pentagram come from?
Well, I'll tell you where it did not come from. The most ludicrous statement I've come across was by an author who said it was originally Christian and Catholic. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. The pentagram itself, this five-pointed star that we see in modern Wicca, witchcraft, which is derived actually in its modern form from Freemasonry, from Gerald Brazeau Gardner, a Freemason, and Aleister Crowley, both also in the OTO, as I wrote about in my book. These Masons grafted on this ancient witchcraft, and the Masonic lodges are also called the craft, by the way, where they use this pentagram not only in witchcraft, but in Masonic lodges. You go back to Albert Pike, and you can find a discussion of the pentagram in his book Morals and Dogma, that one of the most important Masonic leaders, as we've mentioned last hour. And he talks about that pentagram, and the veneration of the pentagram is the veneration of this dog star Sirius, S-I-R-I-U-S, which is a dual star, Sirius A and B. Well, what does that have to do with the price of tea in China? Well, Sirius was venerated in ancient Sumerian civilization, which was very occult. And you can read about this in studies done by people like Robert Temple in The Sirius Mystery, and others such as even OTO leader Kenneth Grant, who wrote about it in The Magical Revival, an important disclosure, which we'll talk about, Revelation of the Method. But the star Sirius was venerated. Why? Why was it venerated? Because it was a symbol of the double, of duality, of the split, which we talked about last hour, good versus evil, as equal, opposite, viable choices. So good's no longer good, and evil's no longer evil. It's all a choice. And so the double mind embraces both, and that's at the heart of the Kabbalah itself. And so this veneration of a double, of what is called the diable in French, which also is not only double, but the devil, the diabolical, the dual, is at the heart of the Kabbalah. That's why you have a pentagram there to honor Sirius, the dog star. So this is now in Masonic lodges, it's now in witchcraft, and it's now in pop culture. I've even encountered it in the education system. You can find pentagrams, witchcraft training called, I encountered one woman training school administrators who was a witch, and she billed herself as a ritual consultant. And she was mentoring them in witchcraft. So the penetration of this level of Kabbalistic mysticism
Hold that thought right there, Craig. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and Craig is just saying that you'll find this, for instance, the pentagram every place in our society. You find it in the Masonic lodges, you find it in witches' covens, you even find it, Sydney, in society where we have people who are openly witches, working in various jobs, training, regular people who have no idea what the training is really all about. but of course getting them, drawing them gradually away from their traditional Christian or Jewish beliefs into this mysticism. And it's all about getting into mysticism and getting the power that is there. And do not scoff at the idea that there's power there. There is power there, but you dare not, under any circumstances, consider tapping into that power, because it could cost you your eternal soul. Go ahead, Craig.
I just grabbed one of the books out of my collection, which was written by an important occult mason of the last, the 19th century, William Wynne Westcott, who was one of the founders or leaders of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. This was an important occult order which originally met in a Masonic lodge, was populated by high-level Freemasons.
Oh, now, is that the Westcott and Hort?
No, I don't think so.
All right, go ahead.
Different one. But this Westcott himself wrote a book, and his writings were gathered up in a book called The Magical Mason, Forgotten Hermetic Writings of William Wynne Westcott. He has a number of chapters on the Kabbalah in here. The Kabbalah, a further glance at the Kabbalah, the ten Sephirot, which are the so-called emanations of God. Well, you already know you're not talking about the God of the Bible when you're talking about ten emanations of God. You're talking about some diabolical substitute deity. And the religion of Freemasonry, which he writes about in an essay and grounds it back in the Kabbalah. So this is a very serious subject to leaders in Freemasonry and in occult masonry, which is their most advanced level of Freemasonry. Now, why do they study things like a pentagram or the symbolism of the hexagram, the six-pointed star? Why do they study this symbol and this ritual? A part of it is exactly what you said. It's to gain occult power. And part of it is to wield that occult power, as they can then use their studies at the theoretical level and at the level of what they believe to be cultural transformation through a sort of Masonic sorcery played out not in their lodge, but on the larger landscape of politics and of historical change. They try to use it to transform the world around them and the world around you and me, the world we live in. So the Kabbalah then becomes a blueprint for the command process. Well, this duality that comes from Sirius, from that star Sirius, the twin star, is also a symbol which is honored in occult Masonic lore as Baphomet, the goat of Mendes. And this goat is basically a hermaphrodite androgynous goat. It has elements of both the male and the female, and the Baphomet symbolizes the double mind as well. Remember, the double mind is a scriptural term we talked about in James 1:8, where it says the double-minded man is unstable in all his ways, and there are other scriptural references, but that's the key one. And Christ himself most strongly condemned the hypocrite. Who is the hypocrite? The man of two minds, the man who, as Christ said, puts his hand to the plow and looks back. We see that emblem in pagan culture honored in the two-faced god Janus. So this two-faced duality, Baphomet, is a key, it's not just an add-on to occult lore, to Masonic symbolism, or to the Kabbalah itself. It's at the heart of it. We talked about the Tree of Life, the diagram from Rabbi Yitzhak Luria, which is used in all the occult lodges with these two pillars. Well, that's part of the symbolism of the attack on the Twin Towers. There were two. Why two? Why Twin Towers? These things are not accidentally chosen, I don't believe, Stan. I think if you look at world affairs of great moment, you'll find occult imagery that is at the heart of occult and Kabbalistic ritual. So that's why we have an attack on the two towers, and that's why we have numbers that surround those events. That usually, if you know your Kabbalah, you can go back and pick out all the situations. You can look at the geography and the geographical toponymy and the lines and the latitudes and the longitudes, and you can come back and you conclude that this is a very carefully planned event, not just in terms of the logistics of pulling it off, but also for a sort of sorcery value that these shadowy occult puppet masters believe is effective in their minds. This is an important part of it. So they're not just studying the Kabbalah to drink Kabbalah energy drinks or tie red strings around their wrists or any of that. They're looking at it at a much, much deeper, ultimately much more diabolical level.
What about astrology? What's the relationship of astrology to the Kabbalah?
Well, there's a, well, I mentioned Sefer Retzil Himalak, this book of theirs. It's dripping with astrological lore. It goes on and on and on with the zodiac imagery and teachings in this book. And, of course, this is a form of obsession with exalting creation and violating the first commandment and honoring creation over the Creator, as St. Paul said was done in Romans by the people he mentioned that God abandoned in their stubborn rejection of him. And not that God abandons anybody, so to speak, but in the sense that they've brought that state upon themselves. He said they exalted the creation over the Creator, who is to be worshipped forever. And this is the sin that we see in the worship of the golden calf, which is worshipping a created thing in the place of the Creator. Well, astrology is really no different, but it's a much more subtle level of that, which is part of our pop culture right now. Every newspaper has a horoscope page, and people consult it in a frivolous way. But the basis of it is in the occult. It's Kabbalistic, and its teaching is fatalism, that you don't have control over your life, and God doesn't have control over your life. Something he created has control over your life. It's a horrible, depressing, disempowering message, but it's been assimilated into our culture, and that's another point. I'm glad you brought that one up. So all of these teachings that have been part of paganism, part of the Kabbalah, are common themes now. They're not just something that a person would have to search out and find books on. It's all over the place. There are sections and bookstores dedicated to astrology when that would have been unheard of 40 or 50 years ago. So back to the pentagram, the hexagram, and the symbolism here for a moment. And why are we now having so many books which disclose these things? And sometimes people try to use that to try to refute people like you or me, Stan. I'm sure you've heard that. They say, well, if this is all such a secret thing, why is it so openly disclosed? For example, in the 9/11 events, after 9/11, a lot of people pointed to the website of the Project for the New American Century, where it was openly confessed by Dick Cheney's pals on this neocon website that they needed a new Pearl Harbor to bring about transformation. And people said, look at that. They wanted another Pearl Harbor, and then they got one in 9/11. Then the argument against that was, well, why would they admit it in advance of the event? What sense does that make? Well, it makes a lot of sense, because if you know hypnosis, hypnosis works by testing the trance state. And as you take somebody down through hypnotic trance, the good hypnotist, the very expert hypnotist, will give a test which could awaken the subject. It's a risk. There's a risk involved in that test. And if the subject does not awaken, two things happen from that. One is the hypnotist now knows the exact level of depth of trance of that subject. That's number one. They have knowledge from the feedback. The second thing, which is even more important, is that the subject goes deeper into the trance at the same time. So this revelation of the method, I like to focus on it from a hypnotic angle. There are other angles that can be discussed, but in this sense, when things are disclosed to the populace, in effect, when our slave masters tell us how they're enslaving us, they confess to it, they show us how they're doing it, they are functioning as an expert hypnotist of the popular group mind. And if the group mind does not react by waking up and by throwing off throwing the bums out, so to speak, if we don't do that, they know right where we are in terms of our mass trance, and at the same time we go deeper into the trance. That's the master stroke of this psychological, Kabbalistic psychodrama that's being played out upon us. And that's why these statements are leaked to the public increasingly. There's been nothing like it in history, where the secrets of the lodges themselves are now out in the open. H.G. Wells wrote The Open Secret, Well, we have open secrets right and left now, all around us, and it's regrettably easy to pick it apart and study it. They tolerate probably to some extent guys like you and me, Stan, because their risk, the bet they're making, the wager they're making, is that our work won't result in people waking up, but will take them into a deeper level of trance. And what we're trying to count on is not risk and not calculation, but prayer and the grace of God to take what we're doing and to make it effective and to turn the tables against them and their system consensus.
And I think that's absolutely right, because neither you nor I are going to turn this thing around. But what we're doing, I believe, is you're doing the will of God, I'm doing the will of God. Our job is, as I said earlier, our job is to sound the warning. Will the people awake? That's up to the Lord. We're going to reach the people that He wants us to reach. You have the knowledge. I have a small voice, and we hope that the Lord will bring the people to listen to our program who are supposed to learn. And He's given them ears to hear. And, of course, hopefully they'll recognize the truth in what you're saying. We're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. Will Western civilization survive? I don't know. But at least we're going to reach as many people as we can in the time that's allotted to us. Craig, pick the story up.
I'm going to take it in a little bit different direction, if it's okay, and talk about the golem, because that's a part of the Kabbalah that I think has a deep symbolic meaning for what's going on in the world right now and how people are being transformed into an enslaved populace. The story of the golem, for the listeners who don't know, it's an old Kabbalah story that in spring of 1580, the great rabbi of Prague, Yehuda Levi ben Bezalel, created a man out of clay, which they called it. He called it a golem to protect the Judaic people of Prague from persecution. That's the story, and he worked the magic to do it from the Kabbalah. There's an old black and white movie which has been re-released, and I think it's from Germany. It's Paul Wegener's movie from I think it was the 1920s with subtitles. It's a riveting thing to watch if you like those sort of things. But it shows a sort of Kabbalistic sorcery going on in the creation of the golem. Well, why is that important today? It's important today because we're being transformed, that is, if we'll allow it to happen, into a sort of golem. And the attempt is to take the masses and turn them into a sort of collective golem that serves the will of the Kabbalistic masters, the puppet masters and elites behind this cryptocracy. So, for example, if there's a war that needs to be fought, the masses will just go marching off as this cohesive force. It's shades of 1984 and the controlled populace, but it's also shades of the golem itself. And if our goal and our task is to try to reach enough people so that golem can't be totally cohesive and energized and come together and serve the purposes of these Kabbalistic, these Merlin-esque, mystic masters with their sorcerous aims and their occult purposes. But the golem is more than a metaphor today, I think. If we look around us, it's hard not to see the populace in a lot of places and cases as a sort of increasingly dull, controlled, hypnotized, zombified group that's all too willing to follow the Pied Piper and the pipes of Pan. So that's the sort of lore of the Kabbalah. I discuss that a bit in my book, and talk about that and towards the end of my book. And we see it today. You can tell somebody to their face in some cases. You can show them, so to speak, the confessions of those who are enslaving them, and yet they'll still march to that same tune, except for the grace of God to take what we're doing, Stan, and make it effective in their lives. So if they have ears to hear, then they'll hear. But otherwise, you've probably experienced it. I've experienced where it's throwing the pearls before the swine to take the other image out of the New Testament. And so the difference in each case, the ground that we sow on, the soil that we're sowing on, we're not ultimately able to control that. That takes the grace of God to open the hearts to the truth. So that's our task. to try to counter this mobilizing, energizing beast, this golem that's being created by these Kabbalistic schemes, purposes, and plots through this network of secret societies, of which one of them that I think is extremely important I've written on, the OTO, as we mentioned. But it's not the only one. And one thing that people need to keep in mind is that this is a network which is interconnected. And even, for example, this OTO, which I've written about, which is Kabbalistic and grounded in the Kabbalah, there are...
Hold that thought.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Craig has been simply talking about these Kabbalistic ideas and how so many people really don't seem to be able to think or think effectively. It's almost as if they're in a trance. And our job is to challenge them with the truth. They may not accept it, but that's not up to either Craig or I or you out there in the listening audience to convince people. Your job is to tell them only God can make them believe. And we never know who we're going to speak to, who may very well, begin to realize what's going on or begin to suspect what's going on. Certainly people are not going to accept the message we put out on these supernatural things. But as time goes by and as things go worse, why, at least we've planted the seed, and hopefully that seed will begin to germinate. So our job is to do our best, and your job is to do your best out there in the listening audience and tell people where they can get the truth. And that is the only hope, that they will ever be free. Maybe, perhaps not politically, but spiritually free from the dark forces of which would, of course, engulf them. So go ahead, Craig.
That's very, very true. I couldn't agree more, Stan. And this OTO, which is grounded in the Kabbalah, as I was saying, it has many branches, many tentacles. Sometimes I encounter a person who's been a member of the one that's most popular in the United States, which actually won a copyright victory, so to speak, in U.S. courts, which if you know how many Freemasons dominate the court system, that's no surprise at all. But somebody will be a part of that, and they'll think that's the entire sum and substance of the OTO today. And they say, well, I haven't met anybody who does this or that. The OTO, as I wrote about it in my book, this Kabbalistic Occult Masonic Order, is a phenomenon. It exists for over 100 years in so many different branches, so many different versions. And so I concentrate on their primary documents and some key moments. Certain leaders have revealed what they're doing or been associated with key events. That's how you have to approach these groups to analyze what they're doing. But going back to the golem itself, the golem also relates I like to relate it through the writings of Norbert Wiener, who wrote a book, God and Golem Incorporated, a comment on certain points where cybernetics impinges on religion. He was a mathematical analyst, internationally known author of cybernetics, very famous man, joined MIT. He studied mathematics under Bertrand Russell and was an extremely famous mathematical genius, so to speak, was awarded National Medal of Science for his contributions. This man discusses cybernetics and relates it to the golem. Now, why is that? Well, I don't believe it's an accident. I think that our obsession today with technology, our obsession, not to say that authentic learning and authentic science isn't something good, in fact, it's a gift of God, but the obsession to take science and turn it into a religion of scientism and to take technology and glorify it as though it's going to perfect creation and improve on what God has already made around us in the natural world, and to pervert the natural order of things, not just to help or heal it, but to pervert it and to twist it. That level is very Kabbalistic. It's very related to the level of sorcery that we find in the Kabbalah, and deliberately so. Scientism and all of its technological wizardry obsessions is consciously tied to aspects of the Kabbalah. And one of the most famous cases of that I could mention, and I do mention in my book, was the scientist Jack Parsons, John Whiteside Parsons, whose work with the space program is so important that he was named, a crater was named after him on the dark side of the moon, and dark side was specifically chosen, I'm sure, for a reason. But Parsons himself was one of the most important leaders in the Ordo Templi Orientis, immersed in the Kabbalah, immersed in the OTO, immersed in the sorcery, and it's no accident that the space program itself has occult symbols, overtones, even to the point where astronauts were Masonic on the moon, there were Masonic men on the moon, and even the Scottish Rite flag was taken to the moon and unfurled in one of the space flights.
Yeah, because wasn't Parsons actually, wasn't he more or less in charge of the National Space Agency?
Parsons was...
He's certainly one of the leaders of it.
Yeah, he was the Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Right.
Grew out of his, actually Harry Guggenheim's funded aeronautical laboratory. That was the California Institute of Technology, GALSIT. And then Caltech's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL. Parsons was, he was a founder of Aerojet, and he was the inventor of jet-assisted takeoff, and he's co-founder of the JPL Jet Propulsion Laboratory. So yeah, the whole space program, he was key to it, and he used to chant Aleister Crowley's hymn to Pan before the rockets took off.
Hold up, we'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly there's both Americans who do not realize that the whole space program, at least the leadership, was deeply involved in the occult. This was personified in Jack Parson, and my understanding, and I've heard the same stories that Craig was just telling us, that when they actually had the first man on the moon, they took along a Masonic flag, they unfurled that. They didn't, of course, unfurl that when the television cameras were rolling, at least not the footage that you were ever allowed to see. For you were not to understand that we then only planted the American flag, they planted the Masonic flag there. And how many of the astronauts were Masons, do we know?
Oh, a number of them. I could don't have the number at my fingertips, but I know a number of them were.
So
going back to Parsons in his chanting of an occult poem as a ritual for the rocket launches is another illustration, and as is this unfurling of the Masonic flag on the moon, that the moon launch was more than a moon launch. It was an occult Kabbalistic ritual. As I mentioned, there's this obsession with symbol, number, place, ritual, alchemy, not in the manner in which we've been told alchemy is, as search after gold or something like that, but to transform consciousness, to transform the culture and consciousness of the masses, this sort of thing. There's a very serious intent that these shadowy elites take when they study the Kabbalah and take it out into everything they do. So if they're involved in a space program, they don't see it as a space program like you or I might see it. They see it as an occult ritual. They look for the way they can stage it to bring about occult purposes and undermine Christian culture, program the masses, and do this sort of thing. So actually, Parsons was only one part of that. The atomic bomb explosion was another moment where we can look at something very mysterious that happened there. A container was hauled out there, which was codenamed Jumbo, and weighed 500,000 pounds, 25 feet long, 12 feet in diameter, and from what we understand of that, it contained a mannequin. In other words, it contained an attempt to animate a golem. That's something I wrote about also. I didn't do the original research, but I talk about it in my book. So these sort of occult rituals intersecting the Kabbalah, the lore of the golem, and modern technology and science actually are much more commonplace than people might think. Moments of mystical madness that somebody might dismiss as irrelevant. They might say, well, these people might have believed this, but what does that have to do with me? These people
Hold that thought there for just a moment, Craig. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Craig was simply saying that to a lot of people, you know, we hear about them having their chance. They hear about them as planning the events, you know, down to the very minute or second. There has all sorts of mystical significance, and the average person says, well, these crazy people, you know, they're into magic, they're into spiritualism, they're into seances, they're into claiming this this ability to conjure up mystical power. So what? Well,
right.
Why don't you explain to them so what is so important?
Right. Well, that's it. I've encountered that. I've had people say that exactly to me. So what? These guys were nuts. They belong to this occult society. So what? You know, that had nothing to do with what happened in the space program, for example. That's just this guy's personal beliefs or something like that. Well, two things to that. First, as you've pointed out, Stan, there is something behind the Kabbalah at the demonic level. And a person has to have a perspective of Christian faith, an intelligent, informed Christian faith, to understand that this is more than just mumbo-jumbo, that there are spiritual forces that are from what they call the night side of Eden in the Kabbalah and of the OTO itself. I wrote about it in my book. These dark forces are real. If a person wants to encounter them, good luck, because they can, and if they keep it up, they will. And it's a deadly downward spiral for people who go down that path. But the other part of it, for the person who doesn't even necessarily believe that and may dismiss what I just said, they should understand that these people may be working a ritual, but note that these rituals are played out on the larger landscape of world history to foment chaos and to bring about this resultant crackdown in terms of an increasing militarized world order, this new world order, this increasing police state. And then that's the other part of the Kabbalah we were talking about, is this oscillation between left and right, between chaos and order, to loosen things up, to bring about a crackdown, and on by processing the masses. That's why I talk about the alchemy of the masses, taking them through this cultural transformation, cooking the mind of the masses as though a Renaissance alchemist is cooking something in an alchemist cauldron. That's something that's observable to an intelligent observer. They don't even have to start with a vantage point of faith. They just have to start with a vantage point of intelligent observation and note history and note the things we've noticed and that have come to light. Like we mentioned, FDR allowing Pearl Harbor, and more recently, 9/11 being allowed. They can look at David Ray Griffin's work on the 9/11 Commission's reports, omissions and distortions. They can look at some of these things and find out that we're being played for suckers. Now, that should concern anybody. And when they find the people who are playing these games are strangely connected through a network of secret societies, they also might understand why we're entreated to this stage show in politics, the Democrats versus the Republicans, the left versus the right, and nothing seems to change. Look at right now, there was a lot of bluster and hope for some that this war would end in Iraq with the Democratic leadership coming into power in Congress. And right after that happened, I said, no, it's not going to end. Of course not. These are people with the same, they go to the same lodge meetings. They're not enemies. They're not opposed in their real agendas. And if they took an oath to this nation, they first took an oath in the Masonic Lodge. They took, in their minds, a higher oath. They're bound in a greater brotherhood. So they already have an agenda that they haven't shared in many cases. And those who have not won't be in power for long. So once we understand that, we can get a handle on why it doesn't work to vote for one party versus the other until we've cleaned house, until we've exposed and driven out the network of secret societies that has a death grip on this country and treats the Constitution like so much toilet paper. Until we understand that, we won't get anywhere. That's why the Kabbalah, that's why I point to this blueprint and these lodges to which these people belong, because they operate by it as a command process and a blueprint for an operating manual for them when they go out and do their jobs in Congress or the presidency or in the court system. So that should concern anybody. So when they say, so what, that's what. It's pretty big, bigger than they might think. And as you know, Stan, once we look at that statement I just made about the world situation, I don't want people to become disenchanted to the extent where they give up. And that's the opposite error. And as soon as somebody starts studying this stuff, that's a trap they can fall into and become very defeatist and say, oh, there's just nothing I can do then. Oh, yes, there is. Let's take a page out of history in America that's pretty much forgotten. And let's go back to the 1800s, and let's look at the Anti-Mason Party. The first third-party system that ever came about in this country was the Anti-Mason Party. How many people know that? And this party almost succeeded for a while in exposing and driving out the influence of Freemasonry in the United States. But then it lost. It had a big setback, and Freemasonry came back stronger than ever after the Civil War and has maintained an increasing grip ever since. But that's an example of intelligent activism. It wasn't the time, providentially, for anything to happen of permanent significance, but it was a good attempt, and those people who tried it should be applauded. So there are things we can do. We can start by education. We can start with intelligent activism. We can start with prayer. But we must keep our efforts focused in an intelligent direction and not buy into the con games that are out there. The masters of this Kabbalistic occult sorcery through the secret societies are masters of deception. They're masters of the partial truth mixed with the lie. The left and the right, neither one will tell you the truth completely. They'll mix some truth in and deceive people. And, of course, this goes back to the father of lies, who's the first and most practiced master of the lie. So the master of the lie in the lodges is ultimately Lucifer. And he's honored in the lodges. We look at, not necessarily openly, but if we look at Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike, we find on page 321, if I remember, a confession that Lucifer is the light bearer, and every Freemason kneels in the first degree and says that he desires and seeks the light, but he probably doesn't understand what they're leading him to is the light bearer that they call Lucifer, but Pike said they do. So this is the ultimate source and energizer behind this tyrannical process, is this worship and exaltation of the enemy of God. And that should concern anybody as well. If they're in a Masonic lodge because their family was in it, or to grease their career track, or for any other reason, they think it'll give them a leg up in business, or maybe they're partly interested in just going out and getting out of the house and having something to do, they should get out tomorrow. They should get out tonight if possible. Get out of that lodge if they've been deceived, and if they take the time to research these things, they'll find that everything we've said about it is absolutely true. So, Stan, I don't know if you want to add anything to that last point. You write about the same thing.
No, I'm in complete and total agreement with you. And, of course, the Masonry is simply one of a myriad of organizations. I mean, in fact, in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, I simply sort of list them all. And, you've got the OTO, you've got Opus Dei, you've got the Lucius Trust, you've got the Theosophists, you've got the Rosicrucians. The Rosicrucians are really the foundation of this movement that's sweeping America. The secret is based upon the Rosicrucian order.
Good point. And the Rosicrucians themselves, of course, we can talk about their origins. I get into that a little bit in my book. I know you get into that. Their important origins back to John Dee, Elias Ashmole, and their sorcery they worked that became codified through the Kabbalah into these Masonic secret societies. And if you look at pictures of Aleister Crowley, who was this leader of the OTO, he also had another occult order, the Argentium Astrum, or Silver Star, also named after Sirius, the star we talked about with the pentagram, the dual star. And Crowley's Argentium Astrum order, the Silver Star, was a Rosicrucian order. Now, if you look at pictures of his robe, he has a rose cross on his robe. So sometimes people wear a cross. And they may fool people to thinking that they actually believe in the same cross that you and I honor, Stan. Well, just wearing a cross may not mean that. Crowley is a prime example. He had a cross with a rose in it. What does it mean? Well, if you study his writings, it's a blasphemous inversion of the meaning of the true cross, where he gives it a thoroughly phallic meaning, which I won't go into over the air. So the Rosicrucians and their famous Rose Cross Order is all about this phallic mysticism, which is also at the heart of the Kabbalah. It's a pagan mysticism. It's tantric. It honors the sexual generative process as a sort of deifying exaltation state. It's a mysticism of the flesh. And this mysticism of the flesh is pretty much the predominant mysticism of the masses today through internet pornography, through, in fact, right there is another key victory for the blueprint of the Kabbalah, is that what used to be a barrier for people to immerse themselves in a mysticism of the flesh and to immerse themselves in pornography, that barrier is gone because they can do it from their bedroom or from their office. They can close the door and get on the internet and have access to the most depraved forms of mysticism, which would have been celebrated in closed lodges of the OTO or other places. But it's now they can do it in their own bedroom. So that's why the old requirement in the OTO that a person should have been a Freemason first, that was an original requirement, that's no longer present. Why? It's because the whole culture has already been initiated into the beginning stages of occultism and of esoteric flesh mysticism, of depravity, of obsessions with death. They're already initiated. The average person's already partially immersed in the occult, just walking around and having contact with this culture. So they're already there. They're already down the road. So the OTO and these other groups can just take somebody off the street, and they're already halfway home. They have less of a job to do with them than they used to. So the Masonic Lodge used to have more importance for taking people's minds down an occult road. It's still important. It's still politically extremely important. Still as a network important, but not as an initiatory process, not as much, because culture now imprints through the Kabbalah and through the occult much of this on the minds of the masses. The internet is a key force for that. So the Kabbalah itself and its obsessions with sorcery, its obsessions with ritual, its obsessions with wizardry and control over creation. For example, the Book of Creation, the Sefer Yetzirah, which has also been translated by Rabbi Kaplan, who wrote a very helpful introduction to it as well. These type of books, which talk about sorcery, they're also at the foundation of the obsessions of scientism and the honoring of science as a substitute God, as a hope in a world that pushes out God and looks for an alternative explanation. Not to denigrate true science, not to denigrate anything that has to do with the fact, you know, many of the great scientists were Christians, which came out of Christendom and Christian culture, and we're not told the truth about that in many cases. We're told a fairy tale version of history. But the real science is different from this. This is the type of cultural mindset where people are taught to look to science as their savior and to look to technology as the people look to the golden calf. Well, it's all the Kabbalistic mindset. And it works today as it worked in ancient Egypt, as it worked in Babylon. It's just an updated version of it as the world is all that closer to being controlled by these elites.
And I would point out that one thing, do not necessarily laugh at this idea that there is this magical power, the ability of the sorcery to actually conjure up all sorts of things and to actually carry out supernatural events, because you're dealing with the other dimension. You're dealing with the supernatural.
Absolutely.
And of course, under no circumstances must you ever really want to tap into this yourself, because it would have tremendous attraction for you. You too could become rich and famous. You too could certainly have fame and fortune, but at what price? Because remember, eternity is an awfully long time. and for so many of the people who have tapped into this, as many people have down through the ages, and certainly many of the great names we know and we associate with remarkable events in history have tapped into this. But, of course, they've all been sent to hell because they went to this other source rather than the very straightforward source in the Bible. I mean, there is a God, and we are not God. We can never approach God. All we can do is fear God and obey God and love God. And that is really what this is all about. There are two forces in the world. There is the God that we worship, and there's the supernatural force that these other people have tapped into. And you need to know it's there. And that's as far as we want you to go. And leave the reading on this to Craig, and I certainly appreciate the fact he's been willing to spend so very much time to get the information. Now, Craig, do you have a website you'd like to get out?
I don't have a personal website, but I could give the website of my publisher where my book can be ordered, as well as ordered from you, Stan, and it can be ordered on Amazon.com. I'll give the full title of my book for interested listeners, and it's Blood on the Altar, The Secret History of the World's Most Dangerous Secret Society by Craig Heimbichner. That can be looked up on Amazon. It can be looked up on my publisher's website, Independent History and Research, and that's at www.revisionisthistory.org. Or, Stan, you mentioned that interested listeners who want to follow up can also obtain that book from you, which I'm very appreciative of, and it does cover in part the Kabbalah. It's not the subject of the entire book. It also has a glossary which talks about some of these occult terms and Kabbalistic concepts. And yes, I did the study for many, and they don't need to go do it themselves. In fact, I agree with you, Stan. I wouldn't encourage everybody to go out and immerse themselves in these books. There's a danger in that for some, absolutely. And reminds me of a student when I was a teacher who was a local leader of a satanic coven, and he found out I knew about the occult, so he used to have talks with me on a lunch hour. I tried to dissuade him from immersing himself in this, but he wouldn't listen to me. He called me one weekend and said he'd been demonically possessed, and the good news is that in the end he was freed by the power of Christ, and he and his whole coven broke up, and they thanked me for that for months to come. But he encountered some very real things from the dark side that he and his friends drove them to the point of fear and desperation to try to find a way out. And he's very fortunate that he found one, but not everybody does.
Amen to that. And of course, many people end up committing suicide or
yes,
doing terrible things. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Craig, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I'd just like to, I guess, key back in on what you were talking about there are two ways to go, Stan. One person can go toward God, another can go away from him, or we can say, I like to think of the two cities that St. Augustine talked about, the city of God, those on their way to heaven, bound together by the love of God, the grace of Christ, their ultimate destiny is heaven. And then there's the city of the world, the city of man, and that's that city, we might say, of the Kabbalah, and it's bound together by lust. And it's manipulated and controlled and filled with lies and deception. It's ultimately grounded in the world of paganism. And the only force that is the only alternative which has ever stood out from that entire world, that entire swamp throughout history, is the message, the power of Jesus Christ. Not a secret Christ, not a Gnostic Christ, not a Christ who's the Rosicrucian Christ or a Kabbalistic false Christ, but the real Christ, and he stands out always as the answer and the antidote for all of this.
And this is really what it's all about, is that age-old struggle between good and evil, between God and Satan. And of course, Satan is a pretty smart individual. He has many manifestations. He has many people, or I should say demonic forces that are out there. But there are many, many people who have been willing, of course, to basically sell their soul to transfer their allegiance to the dark side for the temporary, of course, advantage of here on Earth. People find that hard to believe, that this could be actually what's going on today. But this is the common denominator. You explain to me how we could have done such a poor job in the Near East and the Middle East. You explain to me how it could be that we fought a 10-year war in Vietnam against a country the size of the state of Mississippi, and America, the greatest and most powerful nation in the world, lost that war. Well, one of the reasons why is because Robert McNamara, why the Secretary of Defense who sent our boys over to Vietnam to fight and bleed and suffer and die, is deeply involved in the occult. He's on the board of directors of the World Future Society, along with Barbara Marks Hubbard and Marie Strong. You'll find his name there today. Both of them are both deeply involved in the occult. Until recently, the logo of the World Future Society was three sixes. Six, six, six. They know what they're doing. Those are their holy numbers. Understand what we're up against. And, of course, Craig, I want to thank you so very much for all you've done, and thank you for being with us. But the 2 hours flew by.
They sure did.